Good afternoon and welcome to Northland Views on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today is April 25th, 2023. I'm Alyssa Deaver, your volunteer reader, and I'm going to be reading from the Verde Valley Independent and the Camp Verde Bugle. And here is today's first story. Mingus Welder wins gold at state, written by Vito Sturinskas on April 23rd. Tough Morgan started welding when he was 9 years old. "Ever since I was little, I had the drive to weld," he said. Years later, that drive has led the 17-year-old Mingus Union High School senior to a state gold medal in welding at the Skills USA Arizona competition, and now he's on his way to the national competition in Atlanta, Georgia. Tough, his real first name, grew up in Cottonwood and still takes welding classes at Mingus and will graduate in May. He also works part-time at Southwest Tank and Steel Incorporated between Cottonwood and Camp Verde. He learned to weld with his dad, Rob, in his shop, Whiskey Time Fabrications in Cottonwood. Tough always liked building stuff after school and later excelled in high school. As a student, he has taken 4 years of welding at Mingus and is in the dual enrollment program at Yavapai College, so he will get college credit. Morgan's mom, Lisa, said her son has lived up to his name, Tough. "It's an interesting name for him to have to carry through his life," she said. "He's got the biggest heart of anyone I've known." Her son once made her a heart sculpture out of timing chains, gears, and bolts. Now they are called Tough Love Hearts. The student is an artist at Whiskey Time Fabrications, where he builds furniture out of metal, which is on Facebook and Instagram. Metal sculptures by Tough and Rob Morgan are at a gallery in Tlacopaque in Sedona. They make functional art tables and lamps out of camshafts and reclaimed engine parts. Lisa said she was surprised that her son is now working in a shop that involves storage tank projects shipped all over the world right out of State Route 260. 3 months ago, he won the regional welding competition at Yavapai College in Prescott. Next, he moved up to the Skills USA state competition in Phoenix against 50 Arizona kids. "Most of it's not even welding. It's blueprint reading and knowledge," he explained. There were 5 welding projects. The senior won gold in his first state competition. "I didn't realize how many good welders were there. Uniform, nice welds," he said. Next will be the National Skills USA competition in Atlanta in June, when the top welders from each 50 states will compete, he said. After Morgan graduates in May, he will work full-time for Southwest Tank and Steel Incorporated while taking classes at Yavapai College to pursue a business degree. "I love to learn." Morgan said he eventually would like to teach people how to weld and run his own company. "What I've learned here is you're never going to be the best welder because there's always going to be a better welder. There's always something to learn." And that's Mingus Welder wins gold at state. Verde Villages POA Board gets new life, written by Vito Sturinskas on April 22nd. The former longtime Verde Village Property Owners Association president is pleased and confident with the new leadership taking the organization over. Patty Greenelch, who was VVPOA president for the past 3 years, had been asking the 500 residential homeowners to step up to leadership positions or the association would have to disband. Aislinn Ellis Maldonado responded and was elected president. "She gets to choose her board members," Greenelch said. "Brad Sutton is now vice president, Jeff Rival, treasurer, and Jessica Walczak, secretary. Our biggest challenge is connecting people," Ellis Maldonado said, "engaging the community to help them see that the $40 to $60 we ask for annually is nothing compared to the friendships, fun, and community they can have." The VVPOA membership is about 300 households. The total population of the Verde Villages is slightly above the population of the city of Cottonwood, which it borders. Ellis Maldonado owns an organizing company and previously worked for the Arizona Department of Economic Security. Sutton has been a business owner and attorney. Rival opened a bed and breakfast in the Verde Village in 2020. Walczak, an occupational therapist, has been in the Verde Village since 2004. Greenelch, who will continue to volunteer for the group, stressed again she would like the community to get involved. "It's hard when so few people are expected to do so many jobs." Ellis Maldonado has a nice team of people to work with. "I was really inspired to see that," Greenelch said. With the VVPO dodging irrelevancy, she is pleased they are going to kick the ball down the court a little longer. The leadership runs the clubhouse, events, discusses issues, lobbies, and takes care of the pond. "As Verde Village president, I hope to see people come together again, in community," Ellis Maldonado said. Our board so far is amazing, and it's no one I really knew before taking on this role. For me, that's proof that our community wants to connect and serve one another, Ellis Maldonado added. This is Verde Village's POA board gets new life. Chipotle plans to open in former bank, written by Vito Sternskas on April 23rd. The former Bank of America building on South Main Street is going to be the site of the state's newest Chipotle restaurant, according to John Palsha of the Carrington Company on Friday, April 21st. However, the historic vault that was the center of the largest bank burglary in Arizona history is going to be scrapped, Palsha pointed out. Carrington & Co. is the owner of the building and will lease half the building to Chipotle, which will have a Chipotlane takeout service. Palsha said they are looking for retail or office to fill the other half. The restaurant will have indoor and outdoor seating at the site located in the Safeway Shopping Center, he said. The restaurant will create about 20 jobs. Palsha said in a perfect world, if all goes well, they are tracking to get it done late 2023 or early 2024. Read the whole story and interview with John Palsha and why he chose Cottonwood in Wednesday's Verde Independent. Chipotle plans to open in former bank. Need to know. Written on April 23rd, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Yavapai College is hosting a brown bag program with guest speaker Dr. Sri Srinkath, who will be talking about the Hubble and James Webb telescopes. This free event will be on Friday, April 28th from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. at the Verde Valley campus at 601 Black Hills Drive, room M137. For more information, call 928-649-4275 or email ollisv@yc.edu. The Clark Memorial Library in Clarkdale is changing its hours of operation beginning Monday, May 1st. The new hours of operation will be Tuesday through Thursday from 1 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. and Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Sedona's Police Chief Stephanie Foley will be a guest of honor at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute's Sedona Community Forum on Wednesday, April 26th. Foley will be discussing how law enforcement has been impacted by the community, how COVID-19 pandemic affected incidents, drug use, and legalization, and more. The event will run from 1 to 2 p.m. in room 34 of Yavapai College's Sedona Center. For more information, call 928-649-4275 or email ollisv@yc.edu. The City of Cottonwood is looking for qualified candidates to fill the position of a city council member. The candidate must be 18 years old, previously reside in Cottonwood for at least 1 year, and currently, and submit a letter of interest and resume to the Human Resources Office at 821 North Main Street. The deadline for applications is May 4th. For more information, visit cottonwoodaz.gov. The Camp Verde Chamber of Commerce is hosting a Movers and Shakers Mixer on Thursday, May 11th, focusing on housing. The event will be full of pest control, home loans, real estate brokers, decorators, and more vendors in the housing industry. The event begins at 4 p.m. at the Verde Estates Clubhouse. To be a vendor, bring your own chairs and table. $15 for guests, $10 for chamber members. And for more information, visit campverdebiz.com. Montezuma Castle National Monument announced the return of the Townsend's big-eared bat. Due to their return, the trail to the Swalit Caves at Montezuma Well will be closed from Monday, May 1st through July 31st. The Townsend's big-eared bat uses the cave as a maternity habitat during the summer months. For more information, visit nps.gov. And that is Need to Know. Nearly 600 Yavapai County employees may benefit from health insurance improvements, written by Cindy Barks for the Daily Courier on April 23rd. In Yavapai County's ongoing efforts to stay competitive in the job market, the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors agreed this week to improve the health insurance package at an annual cost to the county of $163,000. Under the change, nearly 600 county employees will see a drop in the amount coming out of their paychecks for health insurance starting July 1, 2023. During a Wednesday, April 19th meeting in Cottonwood, Yavapai County Human Resources Director Wendy Ross presented the item to the supervisors, noting that the recommended change is part of an ongoing effort to continuously review our total compensation and benefit package here at the county. Ross said the county currently pays 100% of the employee-only health insurance coverage cost and subsidizes 25% of the cost of the dependent coverage. Recently, we sat down and looked at what our employees are paying for their dependent coverage compared to the other entities in the Yavapai Combined Trust, Ross said, adding that the other entities include the City of Prescott, Yavapai College, and the town of Chino Valley. What we are recommending in order to line our costs up with the other entities is to increase the subsidy for the PPO 350 health insurance plan to 36% instead of 25%. And that would increase the subsidy for the dental plans and the vision plans to 36%, Ross told the supervisors. The annual cost of the county is estimated at $163,000, Ross said, and the change is being recommended to become effective July 1st, which is the beginning of the county's next plan. Pointing out that the county has about 1,500 benefit-eligible employees at any given time, Ross told the supervisors, if we were to make this change, approximately 597 employees would feel a positive impact to the amount coming out of their paycheck. The amounts of the impacts would vary based on the options each employee has selected, but it would be close to 600 employees who would see the cost of their health insurance go down, Ross said. Supervisor Donna Michaels noted that the county earlier addressed its compensation plan to make county salaries more competitive. It looks like this is the same thing, Michaels said. How do we bring equity, perhaps competitiveness? Obviously, you're recommending this because it improves morale, and that adds, of course, to a healthier culture in our government. The supervisors unanimously approved the increase in the county's contribution toward family health insurance premiums. That's nearly 600 Yavapai County employees may benefit from health insurance improvements. Longtime city clerk retires, written by Vito Sturinskas on April 22nd. Longtime city clerk Marianne Jimenez retired from her position on Friday, April 14th. She has provided 35 years of dedicated service to the city of Cottonwood and will be greatly missed, interim city manager Rudy Rodriguez explained on Thursday, April 20th. Marianne will continue to volunteer at the community garden for a short while until the city finds someone to take over the responsibilities. Rodriguez said she takes a large amount of institutional knowledge with her. Tammy Mays is the acting city clerk, Rodriguez said. She was the deputy city clerk. The city clerk job posting on the City of Cottonwood website closes applications for the city clerk position on April 30th, 2023. The first review will be April 13th and is open until filled. It states that the city clerk works under the general direction of the city manager. The hiring range for the city clerk is $79,952 to $99,940. The long-term salary range extends to $119,928. Salary for the chosen candidate will depend on experience and education. Qualifying employees who choose to purchase a home in the Verde Valley are eligible for down payment loans up to $15,000 after 1 year of employment. The city employs approximately 232 full-time employees. That's longtime city clerk retires. Trauma of process often deters victims from reporting sex crimes. Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, Part 2. Written by Paige Daniels on April 23rd. As the month of April is advancing, we come to our second part of the Sexual Assault Awareness Month series. April is dedicated to raising awareness of statistics in which sexual assault is occurring and providing support and resources to survivors. A captain with the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office in the Law Enforcement Services Division, Tom Bolt, said, "Unfortunately, sexual assault is not commonly reported in Yavapai County. We have been dealing with this for the entire history of American law enforcement. It's a complicated issue," Bolt said. "Oftentimes, the survivor doesn't even report the assault." According to the Arizona Department of Health Services, 41.3% of women and 19.9% of men experience sexual violence at some point in their life. Bolt says the process of reporting the assault for a survivor is far from relaxing. After a survivor calls us, there is a cursory interview with a deputy or a detective to establish jurisdiction and basics about the crime, Bolt said. When those have been confirmed, we reach out to the Yavapai Family Advocacy Center and let them know what the allegations and evidence are. These are just the first steps, Bolt said. After reaching out to YFAC, YCSO finds an available forensic nurse to perform an exam. Then, the Yavapai County Attorney's Office is notified and authorizes the same exam to the survivor. YCSO provides survivors with rides to and from forensic exams and resource centers. All of this is done through trauma-informed care, Bolt said. There will be a victim advocate right at the beginning, and they will connect with various organizations regarding housing or outreaching or whatever the survivor needs. From multiple interviews and exams to long car rides, Bolt says this can be stressful for a survivor. Sometimes a YCSO deputy will even have to drive a survivor down to Phoenix for the next available forensic nurse. My priority, first, right now, is finding a way to expand YFAC into the Verde Valley and not just in Prescott Valley. Right now, if we have a victim in the Verde Valley, we have to give them a ride over to Prescott Valley, Bolt said. They are already suffering from trauma, and now they have to sit on a 40-minute drive. Bolt says, Sexual Assault Awareness Month is extremely important because it shines a light onto these sexual crimes and their survivors. It helps to make victims feel like they aren't alone, Bolt said. There are other people out there that have gone through similar things, and there is a community here to help them. Although there isn't a YFAC in the Verde Valley, resources are still available. For information and resources, visit yfac.org or verdevalleysanctuary.org or call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 800-656-4673. And that's trauma of process often deters victims from reporting sex crimes. Just as a quick reminder, you're listening to Northland Views on Sun Sounds of Arizona. New in legislation to restore overdose review team gets Hobbs' signature. Written on April 22nd. Legislation sponsored by Arizona State Representative Chuang Nguyen, Prescott Valley, to reinstate the Drug Overdose Fatality Review Team was signed into law last week by Governor Katie Hobbs. The review team was established in 2016 within the Arizona Department of Health Services, DHS, to develop a drug overdose fatalities data collection system. By law, the review team's authorization expired on January 1, 2023. Representative Nguyen, House Bill 2194 is an emergency measure that immediately reinstates the review team and its powers and duties until 2029. Prevention works, and the data provided by the review team to help with that is essential to combating dangerous narcotics and overdoses, Nguyen said in a statement. Entities such as Matt Force in Yavapai County, prosecutors in the state legislature depend on information from the review team to identify and implement recommendations to prevent overdoses. And it's working. It's been reported that overdose deaths in Yavapai County last year decreased, despite increasing numbers at the statewide level. That's a testament to the prevention and education efforts that have been aided by the valuable information provided through the review team. The review team was established to, 1, develop a drug overdose fatality data collection system, 2, conduct an analysis on the incidence and cause of Arizona drug overdoses in the preceding year, 3, encourage and assist in the development of local drug overdose review teams, 4, develop standards and protocols for and provide training and technical assistance to local review teams, 5, develop protocols for drug overdose investigations, 6, study the adequacy of statutes, ordinances, rules, training and services to determine what changes are needed to decrease preventable drug overdose fatalities and, as appropriate, take steps to implement these changes, and 7, educate the public regarding the incidence and causes of drug overdose fatalities, as well as the public's role in preventing these deaths. The review team consists of 20 members, 9 of which are the heads of various government agencies, offices, or councils, and 11 of which are individuals who meet outlined criteria and are appointed by the director of DHS. The review team must designate a member to serve as chairperson or team coordinator. DHS must provide professional and administrative support to the review team. The chairperson or team coordinator of the review team or a local review team must be provided with, upon request and within 5 working days, access to information and records regarding a drug overdose fatality that is under review. The review team may request any additional necessary information regarding a fatality from the individual's healthcare provider or from the state or applicable political subdivision. However, a law enforcement agency may withhold from the review team any records that might interfere with a pending criminal investigation or prosecution. Additionally, the director of DHS may apply to the Superior Court for a subpoena as necessary to compel the production of books, records, documents, and other evidence related to a person who overdosed on drugs. All information and records acquired by the review team or any local review team are confidential and are not subject to subpoena, discovery, or introduction into evidence in any civil or criminal proceeding, unless the information is otherwise available from an outside source. Members of or any person who attends or presents information to the review team or a local review team may not be questioned in any civil or criminal proceeding regarding information presented in or opinions formed as a result of a meeting, unless the person is testifying to public information or information obtained independently of the review team. Any person who breaches confidentiality of review team information or records is guilty of a Class 2 misdemeanor. Matt Force, a drug education and prevention program, is the main operator of the review team in Yavapai County. It relies on the data and information collected by the review team to help its efforts to educate and eliminate substance abuse within communities. Information was provided by the Arizona House of Representatives. And that's new in legislation to restore overdose review team gets Hobbs's signature. Hobbs vetoes two bills on guns and schools, says there are better ways. Written by Howard Fisher for The Independent on April 19th. Parents won't be able to bring their loaded weapons onto school campuses, at least not while Katie Hobbs is governor, nor will students get training on gun safety. In a single veto letter Monday, the governor vetoed both measures, saying they do nothing to prevent gun violence, and she said if safety of school children is really a concern of lawmakers, there are better ways to do that, ways the Republican-controlled legislature has refused to consider. Hobbs also vetoed two other measures. One would have directed judges, when confronted with two conflicting interpretations of a state election law, to err on the side of which promotes more transparency. The bill adds unnecessary language into statute and does not solve any of the real challenges facing election administration, the governor wrote of HB 2319. I look forward to working with the legislature on bills to do that. And even Representative Alexander Colladin, Republican from Scottsdale, who crafted the bill, acknowledged much of this wouldn't be necessary if lawmakers crafted clearer statutes. Hobbs also rejected HB 2297, which would have said that prosecutors pursuing cases of fraudulent schemes and artifices are not required to establish that all of the unlawful acts occurred within the state. This bill will lead to confusion where none currently exist, Hobbs said in her veto message. Existing state law adequately outlines the jurisdictional issues addressed in this bill. But the governor saved most of her comments for the two gun-related measures. SB 1131, proposed by Senator Janae Shamp, Republican from Surprise, sought to create an exception to existing laws that preclude loaded guns on school property. It would have allowed parents who have a state-issued permit to carry a concealed weapon to keep it with them if they also have a child at that school. Shamp said that, if nothing else, it would keep parents rushing to the school from being charged with a felony simply because they forgot to first unload the weapon. Anyway, she told colleagues, it is far safer to keep the gun loaded than risk accidents when unloading and reloading it. HB 2332 was pushed by Representative Selena Bliss, Republican from Scottsdale. It would have required public and charter schools to provide age-appropriate training in firearms safety to students in grades 6 through 12. None of that would involve the actual instruction on how to operate weapons. Instead, it was promoted as teaching simple, easy-to-remember steps so individuals who receive the training know what to do if they ever come across a firearm. Hobbs found neither plan acceptable. Mandatory firearm safety training in schools is not the solution to gun violence prevention, the governor wrote. She said the requirement could have immediate and long-term impacts on the health and well-being of students, teachers, and parents, though Hobbs did not spell out what those were. Nor did she like Shamp's proposal. Allowing more guns on campus will not make a campus safer, she said. Then there's the fact that police officers arriving at a school with an active shooter situation won't necessarily know who are the criminals who are armed and who are the parents. I'm focused on finding concrete solutions to gun violence prevention that protect Arizona families, including but not limited to policy focused on trauma-informed emergency planning and safe, secure gun storage, the governor wrote. And Hobbs said lawmakers did have a chance to consider such a measure. She pointed to HB 2192, which would have made it illegal to keep a firearm or ammunition in any home unless they were in a securely locked box, or the gun was equipped with a device that makes it inoperable without a key or combination. The only exception would be if the owner was carrying the gun or it was within close proximity. It is dubbed Christian's Law, named after Christian Petillo, who, while at a friend's house in Queen Creek for a sleepover, was fatally shot. The death was ruled accidental. House Speaker Ben Toma, Republican from Peoria, never even assigned the measure by Representative Jennifer Longdon, a Democrat from Phoenix, for a committee for a hearing. In fact, GOP leadership used a procedural motion to block a bid by Longdon, who is paralyzed from the waist down since a random drive-by shooting in 2004, to bring what is known as Christian's Law to the full House and put all lawmakers on record. House Majority Leader Leo Biasucci, Republican from Lake Havasu City, defended the maneuver. At the end of the day, it's the person behind the gun, he said, in engineering the move to block a vote. And we should never forget that the Second Amendment says, shall not be infringed. Monday's actions bring Hobbs's total vetoes this session to 52. The record of 58 was set by Democratic Governor Janet Napolitano in 2005. That's Hobbs vetoes two bills on guns and schools, says there are better ways. Texas coast, best birding in North America. A Texas blitz, 2 weeks, 300 birds. Hang on, a birding trip starting at the upper Texas coast to the Rio Grande Valley and back would get you more species than any other trip in North America. High Island is the number one migrant trap in North America, and the Rio Grande Valley has more must-go-there birds than any other place in North America. Come listen. In 45 minutes, Rich Armstrong will take you on a delightful whirlwind trip, including over 120 birds you do not see in Arizona. The event will be on Wednesday, April 26th at the Sedona Public Library at 3250 White Bear Road. Social time will begin at 4 p.m., and the program starts at 4:30 p.m. All are invited to this free event. That's Texas Coast, best birding in North America. And that's going to conclude today's segment of Northland Views. I'm Alyssa Deaver. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please join us each weekday for more news from around the Northland. Take care, everyone.